On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio. Now it's news and current affairs with SBS Dinka.
We're ping ne agu ya tonga jeng ne SBS Dinka Radio.
Ni man ne ta tier kro ko de ya ke tier ku diak ne Melbourne Australia ran be token walk ni studio ni man live ne Facebook Angelina Tang de nan ko won ku chen ke Angelina Thomas Kumi ku ken ken ka ben wo ke jam tin ke ran di ko ke SPL min ayo ke ke ben wo jam tin e loide. Welcome to SBS Dinka Radio. This is a special coverage to talk to Angelina Thomas Kumi or Angelina Tang, to many who are not aware of those names. That is that name, and Tang is a husband surname. So I think we will be talking about the politics of SPLMIO, South Sudan, and peace by Angelina Tang, Angelina Thomas Kumi. And the reason for us making this interview is to understand the situation back in South Sudan. And so we will be talking mostly about South Sudan peace and also talk about the politics of SPLM-IO and the politics of the transitional government, in which Angelina and the senior members of the SPLM were part of it before July. Now she is here with us. You can share that on Facebook, and we will be talking mostly about that. Welcome, Honorable Angelina Tang. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm actually good.
Okay. Now, we will be, before we were live on radio, and you are now in Australia, and we will be talking to South Sudanese and the world online. Tell us, why are you in Australia?
I'm in Australia, as I stated earlier, that our house is on fire as South Sudanese, and it's a very bad fire. Inside there are children, there are elderly, there are women and all sorts. And we need to really work together to put this fire out, not just us as South Sudanese and South Sudanese in diaspora, but also those who are concerned amongst the international community. So I'm here to speak to the Australian government and to see if they can actually play a role in helping us put out the fire. I'm also talking to the diasporan to help them and help us think together to define a role for each and every one of us to see to it that this actually a catastrophe end in our country and that we start to have a sustainable peace.
Now, when we talk about South Sudanese politics, that four people that are always on top of the agenda when people talk, that is you, that is Salva Kiir and Ayan Mayadit, Dr. Riek Machar, and Angelina Tang. These are the people who were, until July actually, were the people that are supposed to be the leading leading the path of everything. Now, you are coming to seek a solution to our problem in diaspora. What have you tried as a person and your husband and then the leadership of SPLM to resolve it?
As a person, of course, you know that I have been part of the delegation that was actually negotiating the peace agreement. As a person, I'm a member of our political bureau. So I work within our political bureau to try and shape some views that I feel would actually help our country go forward. Let me tell you some of the ideas that I am and with others are championing within the IO, and the IO has actually picked up on some of these. One is justice and accountability. Which we feel that actually these cycles of violence and what have you would never end unless we actually establish a system of justice and accountability for anybody who actually violates another person's right to be made accountable for that and to end impunity in our country, because impunity has become a very big thing. The other thing that I as a person continue to fight for, and IO has actually lost this battle during the talks of the 2015-2014, is a total demilitarization and a cantonment of all the forces until such time that we put together a national vision for our security sector.
Now, if we were to go back because everything that we are talking about now must have started somewhere. When you talk about justice and accountability, who is the main suspect on that?
Justice and accountability. You know, when war break out, war has its own takes its own life, and so on. But when we talk about justice and accountability, we are talking that if you remember, if you go back before 2013, as an SPLM, we had internal dialogues. These dialogues were discussions about our constitution.
As a political party?
As a political party. It was about our vision as a political party, the way to move forward, because the people of South Sudan actually has given a verdict when leaders of the SPLM were sent after the referendum to talk to the membership of the SPLM as well as the citizens at large about and thank them on their role for supporting and standing firm on the right of self-determination and so on. Now, the verdict came back and we were told that SPLM has lost vision and direction. And these verdicts, when we were brought back to the party and a dialogue was to be started, President Selfa saw it as an attack on his personal leadership and he was not ready to have
that dialogue. Okay. After that tour, this is where the contestant came in, Dr. Riek Machar declared that he's going to contest for the SPLM leadership. And Pagan later declared that, and also Mama Nyanding declared that. Do you think that you will not be shaken by what happened? Because he's now aware that these people are after my leadership.
Not quite, because the debate actually started in the SPLM way before even the 2008 convention. Of the SPLM, because the discussion was all about the type of constitution that is needed for the party, the democratic nature of the party, the system of governance, and the structures and internal democracy and what have you. Not only that, the debate also was about the serious intercommunal fights that were going on, the insecurities, the economic policy that was not actually producing anything. And so on. And this debate has been going on within the SPLM, but these debates have been suppressed because people wanted to focus on the referendum. And President Selfa, when people reach that stage, is basically a long debate.
And when you talk of intercommunal fight, in 2010, you challenged Taban Dengai in the leadership of Unity States when you were contesting for the governor. Mm-hmm. As independent candidates.
Yeah.
After that, Galwak revealed, saying that the election was rigged and was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not aware of any statement that you condemned that Galwak was not doing my wish.
Then you have not followed. You have not followed anything. In fact, I only got to know Galwak during that election. I have never knew him as a person as such. However, I want to state this very clearly, and I have made this in numerous interviews, that I am going to get my redress in court. And I did take my case to court in Khartoum. And my case was reviewed, was sent back to the Electoral Commission. The Electoral Commission, up to date, did not actually pass a verdict. And finally, I decided that I have accepted the results, whether rigged or not rigged. And everybody knows me on record that I have said that we are going to test our institutions. And that is why we even stood election as independent, because it is my feeling that a government that have or a country that have stable institutions, strong institutions, should withstand any political debate, any political storms, and what have you. And
but would you not appreciate the chairman of SPLM by then allowing you to stand as an independent candidate?
He did not allow me.
So how did you come back to the party?
Because actually, SPLM, if you recall back, the whole SPLM contested, independent and not independent. So it's basically the dictatorial nature of SPLM that actually led for more than 70% of members of SPLM fighting itself but within the election.
Can I finish?
I want to say this. And this is actually what even brought, that is the debate that started in 2008. The decision-making within the party was concentrated in the political bureau. And the decision that were taken on who is to contest where was taken away from the membership at the grassroots level and was decided by the political bureau. The SPLM in Unity State had decided that they rejected the nomination of the political bureau of Tabandeng, and they brought me up. When I went as independent, I was actually brought by the SPLM at the state level. And they have written to the political bureau saying, we reject your person, we are putting up our own person.
Your husband was the deputy chairperson of the SPLM. What role did he play to accept your candidacy or reject that?
He is a member of the political bureau, so I'm not going to talk about the decisions, because as political bureau, they also voted. How he voted, that is a business for the political bureau. But the point I'm trying to make is that the party was not democratic. The party, the decision were made by a group of 27 people.
I'll give you, here in Australia, we have political parties.
Mm-hmm.
And they always nominate whoever they want to contest.
Exactly.
Are they democratic or they are...
There is a system and a process of, if you call, internal democracy. And this is what was violated by the political bureau. Because actually, in that process, the Unity State and other states, including Western Equatoria, have decided and sent their nominees to the political bureau. The political bureau simply did not respect the wishes of the party at the lower level as per the constitution
and that,
of the SPLM.
That's why Bokasoro contested as in
exactly.
The okay.
Yeah.
Now let's come to, that is politics. Let's come to this crisis. Since 2012, a lot of, if you look at the timeline, a lot of things have been happening until the triggers of the press conference on the 6th of December 2013. Were you part of those who attended the press conference, or were you not?
I did not attend the press conference, not because I was not going to be there, but because I was actually on a peace mission in a place called Kurun in Eastern Equatoria.
Okay.
As part of the national dialogue process or the national reconciliation and healing process that was going on. So I'm a member of that. I happened to be in Eastern Equatoria at the time. That's why I was not part of the conference, because I'm saying this because I actually identify with all the issues that were raised at the press conference.
Yep.
But I want to go back a little bit. You see, the major disagreement that happened in the party and which actually prompted all of the things that you said about was once we achieved the referendum, there was a discussion on the type of constitution that we needed.
Within the SPLM?
Within the country and the SPLM.
Okay.
Within the SPLM, there were divergent views. President Selva and a few others who are with him, who actually helped him put together a constitution, were for a centralized constitution that took a lot of the powers, put them on the president and what have you. Others, and included the then vice president, spoke about there is a need for a new system of governance so that we can have an opportunity to overhaul the system of governance and the structures in the government, so that at least we can reform the institutions that were used as institutions of marginalization during those years of war.
Look, the document that all of you as SPLM used in 2005, that was CPA and the interim constitution of South Sudan, and that gave a very clear indication of what a state government should be. When is the judiciary going to be to be taken to other states? All these guidelines were set out.
Exactly.
What argument was Dr. Riek making, actually, that that was better than the one that was in CPA?
But remember, actually, the CPA, the constitution we have now that is called the transitional constitution, is far more inferior than the constitution you're talking about.
Yep.
Part of it was to preserve what was given to us by that constitution. Remember, that constitution actually gave us the opportunity to even vote for our independence.
Yep.
That constitution is supposed to be a federal constitution, because remember, Republic of Sudan is a federal republic.
Republican.
And actually, we have as SPLM during the CPA, when the constitution was being put together, we have improved that constitution tremendously. We wanted to preserve that those gains and add more. And this is what President Selfa didn't like. So he came up with a constitution that actually removed a lot of those powers that were in the constitution and concentrated them on himself. Now, to make things worse, he got his way. He threatened Parliament. He told Parliament, if you don't vote for this constitution, I'm going to dissolve you and what have you. But to make it worse, he himself could not even adhere to the constitution he imposed. He started to dismiss governors who have been elected and
now,
what have you.
If you go back in 2005, when the Government of National Unity was formed in Khartoum, mm-hmm. you later became a minister of mining within Khartoum government.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Juba then, but Dr. Riek was always stationed before. It was always stationed in Juba. Do you think that he should have done much to change this mentality to the people of South Sudan? Because then he has a lot of powers. He was a vice president and a minister at the same time.
Have you ever known a dictator who allows collective leadership in any dictatorial system? That aside, if you recall.
Before you finish, when you were in Khartoum, I was in Juba,
mm-hmm.
and the flexibility that Dr. Riek have, I will not call it a dictatorship, because if you look at the case of Yambio, when the intercommunal clashes started in 2006, he led the committee. The same thing in Pibor, he led the committee. He was always a man of a big responsibility.
But do you know the battles he had in private so that he can actually go into those communities to begin to resolve these things peacefully? Serious battles. President Selfa always was of the view that any intercommunal conflict is to be handled militarily. I'll tell you one example.
Go ahead.
When something happened in Malakan, I was in South Africa with President Selfa.
2008?
I was with President Selfa in South Africa. President Selfa called me, sent for me, and he said, Angelina, I want you to talk to Riek Machar. Tell him. He always just jump on the plane wherever there's problem and he wants to go and solve them. Tell him not to step foot to Malakan.
So he's telling you that as a wife or as a official?
I was shocked. I could not even ask him as what. So I asked him, Mr. President, I hope you spoke to him because he's your vice. And he said, yes, but I want you to also go and talk to him. Remember, he's my president as well. So I also had to kind of say, look, Mr. President, if you spoke to him, then if it's the right thing, I'm sure he will do it. And so on. So I want to give you an example of how President Selfa was handling those intercommunal conflict and the disagreement he had with his vice with regards to those. More often than not, Riek Machar went into places of conflict defying what the president says.
But on the other side, I give you another example. Yep.
I was sent as part of a delegation to go and talk to George Athor. Myself, Majangda God,
Bishop Daniel Deng,
and Bishop Rodolph, God bless his soul, who just died recently. There was a number of church leaders.
Yeah.
As we arrive, after a lot of negotiations and what have you, as we arrive to where George Athor was, we were used to actually track down where George Athor was going to be. And we were sent.
So you were used as a security indicators to show exactly where
exactly.
he is.
Exactly. And before we landed, because now, you know, the UN also have to give the coordinates of wherever
they are landing.
Exactly. And these coordinates, as soon as they got to Juba, troops were marching onto us. This is how President Selfa was handling such conflicts. Not only side conflicts, even intercommunal conflicts.
Is there a proven facts that
there is a proven fact. You remember in Jongole on those intercommunal conflicts, the United Nations Security Council actually indicted some of the SPLA soldiers. There's no SPLA there's no soldier who can actually go to do what was being done in Jungle Estate without the authorization from the government.
Okay, we will come back to those stories, but I need us to just do a bit of a break, and then SBS World News atoke ye bin will chiele keg na pinom. Eben ujala ka chiele keg baene. Bienge will chirut bi item ka chiele keg na radio ich kane yom tenen agutye yom jema te ne tadetem dai ne TV ne kulto kuben ne tadetem ne bian. They ne nin kadia ne SBS. Name sbs.com.au/news. Agoyuk ne le kuotek. Ayen, welcome back. We chu keg lor we koi ping ne SBS Dinka Radio. Koi ran tokenen. Angelina Tang, Angelina Thomas Kumi. I think an bekan jam, I'll take her back a bit to nanga to her own story. In 2003 in Panyagor, I met your dad. You may be surprised with that.
Yes.
You may be surprised with that.
He was a good man.
I met him during the Upper Nile conference.
Congress.
And I think there were five of us. We sat down with him and with Johnson Mandwale when they came from Khartoum. And most of the people don't know who is Angelina Thomas Kumi. Can you tell us that? Who is Thomas Kumi and who are you?
Of course, I'm Angelina. But you see, Thomas Kumi is actually he passed on in 2008. He was one of those politicians. If people actually those who go back a little bit during this Executive Council
leadership of Abdelalia,
the autonomous government of South Sudan, and prior to that, he's been an active political player in South Sudan. He was minister, he was governor, he was a number of things. But Thomas Kumi was a man who he gives the word integrity a serious meaning, because he's a man who always, regardless of what, would say the truth. And now I will tell you one story.
Yep.
That
go
stands
ahead.
Out. You know, he was in prison for a long time during...
Japer Mamani Mary.
No. During Omar al-Bashir's time.
Okay.
And so on.
When the INF came on?
Exactly. He actually, they first appointed him governor to Unity State. He did not last for 2 months there. When he went to Bentiu, what's his name? The guy who... They call him Shamsuddin.
Oh, Shamsuddin, the former vice president, the former security
exactly,
official.
Exactly. Yeah, Shamsuddin. I think they were doing some operations, and he decided that there would be no military operation to be launched from Bentiu.
Yep.
Shamsuddin went back to Khartoum, and then came back, and as he was in the room, and he came back and found Shamsuddin sitting on his chair, and he told Shamsuddin, "Are you the governor of this state?" Shamsuddin, of course, wanted to, and he said, "If you're the governor, tell me. If you're not the governor, get off that chair." He was bundled, he was taken to Khartoum, and he was under arrest for a number of years.
Because it was difficult to challenge Shamsuddin then. That's what I heard.
It's probably not just the challenge for Shamsuddin, but I'm trying to show you the kind of man who would say whatever he thinks is the right thing, regardless of the circumstances, whether it is a threat to his life or not, and so on. But of course, because also when I think IGAD and leaders from the region visited Sudan, and they wanted to discuss the future of South Sudan before the CPA, and people were discussing the CPA and going into the declaration of the principle.
Yep.
In a meeting, he told them very clearly, many of the leaders who were in there were talking about, unity and what have you. He was very clear. And he said, you are coming from out there, and my words are very few. And this is what I'm telling you. You want a resolution to the conflict of South Sudan and Sudan? Yeah. You must allow the people of South Sudan to decide to
now,
go their way.
What influence, and I want to focus on that, what influence you are... A daughter of a minister, a former minister or a governor, a politician and now become a politician yourself. What influence does your dad have in you?
I have always grown up knowing that the truth is the truth, and you must say it. And it is what makes you who you are. If you're not an honest person in this world, then you have a problem, because your identity is defined by how you look at the world. And you look at the world from the eyes that you have this SBS is red, is on a red background. If it's red, I must say red, even if you were to cut my neck.
I will come back into that when we talk politics. But when this brings us to the stories that maybe you will verify this. Mm-hmm. When we were in Panyagura, I was told the story that Thomas Kumi, your dad, actually helped brought up Taban. Is that a true story?
It is.
It is a true story. Mm-hmm. Because you are related to Taban Dengai.
Yes.
Why are you always in different political path? And I heard that before. He actually passed on. He united you and Taban. Maybe your husband was involved. Why is it always that you go into different political path?
Because the way I look at things is not the same way Taban look at things. I tell you, integrity is very important for me. Telling the truth is very important for me. Giving the people the opportunity to say what they think, to champion their thinking, is very important for me. I don't like to dictate people. I appreciate a healthy debate. If my mind is changed through a debate, I always acknowledge it and say yes. Taban, on the other hand, has very different values. And these are his political values, and he's entitled to them. The only time I would have serious disagreements is that when he takes these values to extreme lengths that actually takes country back to war, because as we are speaking now, a lot of us are holding somebody like Taban as an agent for this war of 2016 that has just happened, and so on. And that is simply because he felt
but,
that...
But why are you not learning from all this? In 2002, or during the peace agreement between Dr. John Garang and Dr. Riek Machar, Taban and Kogrue and some of the team were actually sent to first, they came first before Dr. Riek, to negotiate the principle of unity between the two camps. They then turned their back on Dr. Riek. The same situation now happened in 2016. Taban was your negotiator, and when you went to Juba, the situation that happened before happened again. Why are you not learning from that?
You see, in public life, this is what public life demands, that actually once you're in one party, you don't hold grudges, because it's about public. It is not personal. Taban left with us in 2013 when we were being chased from Juba. And when we were in Gadiang, now an opportunity, or the regional body IGAD decided that there must be
a negotiation
and so on. Taban actually was not the leader of the team. Taban was supposed to be just a member of the team. But what our chairman did is he actually composed his team of Pagana Mum, Deng Alor, and those who were in prison. And he simply demanded that these are my negotiating team, and you must release them and bring them to Addis to come and negotiate the peace agreement.
Who did that?
That was Machar.
Oh, Dr. Machar, okay.
Yeah. So Taban was just a player in the team. And the team was supposed to be led by Pagana Mum. But because they were in prison, Taban now, as the most leading person, in fact, Dr. Machar actually requested Madame Rebecca and say, well, since those guys are not there, can you actually go and lead the team and negotiate as her first step their release?
Yeah.
But she declined that offer. And then the next senior person became Taban. And then he was instructed to continue to negotiate the release of his main delegation.
That brings us to the politics of 2013 and the results of what happened. And we will start in Juba. On the 14th, you didn't attend the SPLM convention, but...
I did attend.
Or did you? And Dr. Rieg didn't attend?
We did attend actually on the 14th. It's the 15th that we declined to go.
Oh, you declined to go. Mm-hmm. Okay. Based on the interviews that I've talked to Dr. Rieg, and he said, look, I was only informed that things are not going to be good at about 10:30 p.m., and that's when I left to my palm at Jebel Orwer. I think that's what he told me. Mm-hmm. What have you heard that night? And why did you escape with Dr. Rieg? Were you, according to the government and most of the people who are talking, that Dr. Rieg was aware of what is going to happen within Tiger? And based on what the President Selfa said, that the gun that were shot at Nyokren, they were by the Dr. Rieg soldiers. Verify that.
I just like to say that that's really not true. First of all, we went to the meeting on the 14th. And when we went to the meeting on the 14th, by the way, there was an appeal from the church leaders.
Yeah.
They have requested us to say, please call off this meeting. Because the opposition or the leaders of the SPLM were going to call for a rally following the 6th media conference. Now, the church asked them not to call for this rally, and they accepted. And the church said, we are going to talk to Selfa to call off the National Liberation Council.
Okay.
For a short time, we want to sit with you leaders and to talk. Because believe me and you, on the 6th, when they made that press conference, there were orders to arrest them.
Hmm.
Yep. It just became difficult. And since that time on, there were orders for their arrest and what have you. So now what had happened is that we went to the conference. It was very, very obvious that things were wrong. Because I can tell you personally, as Angelina, when I arrived that place, I could not even recognize the faces that were there. Usually we are in these occasions, and we know the guards that are usually, you know, the Tiger, we're familiar with them.
Yeah.
I can tell you that I could not...
What were the songs that were sung at that? Who was singing those songs?
I just want to name one person.
Okay.
And this person is called Selfa Matuk.
Okay.
Yeah. People talk about a girl and so on, a girl, and what have you. But I think she just gets carried away when...
By the song.
But yeah, because, you know, when people sing those songs of Shalabuga Diutalga and, you know... But Selfa Matuk literally came at me, pointing at me like this.
A gun? Like his hand?
His hand. And I was sitting right up because there were no seats for me, nor were there seats for Dr. Rieg. His bodyguard had to go look for a seat to come and put.
You mean the leadership of SPLM is supposed to sit somewhere and Dr. Rieg's seat was not there?
No, it was not there because usually the front row, there are seats for all
for the
leadership.
Chairman. Yep.
There was seat for Wariga, and there was seats for President Selfa, but there was no seat for Dr. Machar. When he came in, one of his bodyguards had to go and bring a chair and place it there. I came in before him because we came in the same car. It took Aliu,
Alina Yang,
who was a minister, to actually come and talk to the guards at the door to allow me in. That was the environment.
So Alina Yang talked with the guards so that you can be allowed.
Yeah, when he saw me and he was standing there and, you know, I was being told you cannot go in and what have you and we are going to search you and we are going to do this. So he came running and he said, no, let Madame go in. And he opened. He did this. And I walked in. I had to look for a seat. So I looked for a seat. I found a seat very up high. You know how Nyakuren is.
Yeah.
So that was the environment. It wasn't a good environment.
So when you escaped from Juba and you went out, you went to toward Yonglé State. Mm-hmm. How did you get out of Juba?
We were having dinner on the 15th, because on the 15th, when it became very clear that actually this meeting was just for humiliating people, and so on. All the leaders of the SPLM who were on one side called themselves and said, look, there's no point in going because the situation is tense. People are just being abused in that meeting. Disrespect. Actually, the most disrespectful thing that I heard in one of the meetings is Deng Dao disrespecting Man Mabior.
Deng Dao disrespecting Man Mabior?
I could not just handle that. I could not.
Did you confront him?
I just had to walk away and not to be in the meeting. I confronted Deng Dao and I spoke with him. But, of course, in the meeting, you have a chair of the meeting. You don't just shout on the ground. And nobody was being given a chance, actually.
So is that where the tension started?
Yeah. The tension was that bad. So we decided the following day that there's no point to come to this meeting. So many of us decided to abstain. We went to church and did our usual things that we do at the weekends and went back home. At 5 in the evening, we were having a discussion with my son, his wife, his friends, discussing Christmas.
So Teng was in Juba that day?
Yes. You remember Teng was also arrested and almost killed.
With his wife?
Yeah. No, his wife actually escaped, you know, and so on. But I want to tell you that when we left on the 15th night, we were being called out at, it was 10:30 or something. And we literally been told that even our house is surrounded. And I left in slippers and my nightgown. Because after finishing hosting the people we hosted, I went in and Dr. Riag took them out to the car and they came running after me. They said, Mama, we have to go out. Go out where? We go out. I was wearing my slippers.
I think Dr. Riek said you were talking with the media expert coaching.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. He's some young man from the north who works for the BBC.
Yeah.
And we were discussing, you know, we're going to set up a website for information and what have you. So it was Manao Peter and his friend. And so on. So we left the house that evening with nothing. In fact, Dr. Riek asked me, say, can I have my computer? I took my bag, I took out all my stuff, my computer, except my phone, and I put his computer in the bag and so on.
How did you get the boat out on the 18th when you left Juba toward Bor? And this is where we are going to get to politics of liberation and all that. How did you get out of that place to the river? And how who gave you the boat?
We didn't get the let's say God works mysteriously. We found many people actually just cross using whatever.
Yeah.
By the time we came there, there was a boat that actually arrived Mangala because we crossed in Mangala.
Okay.
Yeah, and that boat is a boat that carries food stuff and so on, and that's the boat that was used actually to cross us across the river to Mangala.
So then you use a car to
we walked.
But that's a long distance to board. How did you get from? Because the report is different. We are told that.
No, we walked from Juba.
Yeah. Because to Mangala.
To Mangala.
And then.
We crossed the river. And in Mangala, there were many cars on the road that just abandoned. And every time we get the final car, put it together, drivers, fuel finish, we get off, we walk. And so on. That's how we actually...
Okay. Let's come now to the politics of Gadet. The 18th of December, Gadet actually started a fight at Panpandia. And that fight led to the situation in Bor, and that became worse on the 31st of December. Was Dr. Riek in that coordination? And... This is something that was said that Dr. Riek was part of that.
A part of what?
A part of the planning that Gadet actually carried out the attack.
You know what happened since when the fight erupted in Juba? There was what you call spontaneous reaction, especially after the killing had happened in Juba, the door-to-door and what have you.
Yeah.
There has been a spontaneous reaction in many places, including when we got to Mangala, there were people who were coming from Magwe, from Magri,
yeah,
from Koringilis. We met a lot of civilians, soldiers, women, children, walking towards Upper Nile. What I can tell you clearly is General Gadet advising us that, you know, that road is bad because there are soldiers leaving Bor going back to Juba. And he advised and says, you see, the road you people are taking is very risky. And so on. We had no choice. And by the way, on the way, we fell onto a couple of ambushes between Bor and Panpander. Now, we got to Panpandia on the 23rd. We were about to spend a night there when we were told that the hot pursuit of the government is on the way. We moved at 2 a.m.
So it is conflicting when people say, actually, you arrive at Panpandia on the 18th.
Nope. We got there on the 23rd, on the 24th, 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yep.
We got up, we went to Bor. When we went to Bor, we were put up in this police place.
In Bor Center?
In Bor Center. I think it's, yeah, the place is actually belong to, this is what they call Shagap. We spent the night there. And this is when Dr. Riek started communicating with the IGAD and with the UN, even from Panpandia. And he put together his delegation for the talks. Now, on the 24th of December, we left under serious fire. Actually, it was a drop of a cluster bomb that actually made us run away from Bor.
But the indication was that the bombing didn't happen that day. That's what the report is saying.
I ran away. Talk to me about it, because I was there. I actually was about to put something for us to eat. Some young person came to me with some chicken. And I was going to cook the chicken. And all of a sudden, I saw chaos, people just running. It was about 3 in the afternoon and so on. By that time, many of the civilians from Bor had actually crossed the river. The many people whom you would find in Bor at that time, many of them were those who felt that forces who are there would not do anything to them and what have you. There were Murles, there were Anuak, there were Nuer, and many went to the UN camps.
That was on the 24th, but...
That was on the 24th. Now, on the 24th, we got attacked. We left Bor under fire.
And went to Gadiang?
We actually did not arrive Gadiang. We arrived at a place called Mathiang. And we were under serious, we fell into a serious ambush, a very terrible one. So, and all this time we were being pursued by the government troops. Government troops took over Bor. Till we left, we arrived Gadia.
Now, if I can ask you a question there, you ran away from Juba because, according to Dr. Riek, he was running away from the... from attack from the government, mm-hmm. that his life was in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Why would Dr. Riek announce that he was going to form a rebellion or he was going to fight back?
He's going to resist.
Resist what? And you are running away from death. Why would you? Where will you get your soldiers?
You have to remember there has been a spontaneous response. Just imagine what happened in Juba. If you didn't organize that anger, how would it have been in South Sudan? What the SPLM, SPLA-IO has done is try to organize the people instead of just a chaos happening in the country. There was reactions in Unity State, there were reactions in Upper Nile, there were reactions in many places. Now, what Dr. Riek has done is basically trying to bring all of these people under command.
Now, that brings us back to now the atrocities and justice, the justice and accountability question. On the 31st, when the White Army overran Bor, a lot of atrocities were committed, and that is documented by the UN, and is also documented. Al Jazeera was actually made some report in the hospital. People in the hospital were killed. Women at the church were actually raped, which is one of the things that I will also reference you when you talk about the civilians in the UN camp being raped. That was said to have been carried out by the White Army, which was then part of the SPLMIO. Is that responsibility is going to go to who? And is that something that Dr. Riek see as a serious problem to his own politics?
Any abuse by any person on any innocent person is not acceptable. Now, let's come to the facts. If you look at the narrative that I have just put, it's basically the story that you're talking about is a disputable story. And this has been said by the Commission of Inquiries. Because actually the White Army did not get to Bor on the 31st. The White Army started to leave Gadiang on the 31st. It was the government troops who were pursuing us, who actually came to Bor. And remember, I reminded you to say, the people who remain in Bor, by the way, were mostly Murle, Anyuak, and Nuers.
Do you have any justification on that?
I do. Because I was there. Because I was actually walking naked, I had no clothes. Women came to give me something to wear.
Let me play something. You listen to that back. And maybe you can get on that.
I do.
Let me give you that if you can listen to what was reported then by Al Jazeera. And that was in a situation to do in Bor. And we may also talk about what happened. This is what Kwalma Nyang said, and I will...
Mashar denies such allegations made by the government. People here have experienced violence before. In 1991, a power struggle between South Sudan's founding father, the late John Garang, and Riek Machar destabilized the community. Government forces recaptured Bor from the rebels on Tuesday. It's now relatively quiet. People are taking advantage of the apparent calm.
Now, when you're looking at the video, the video is showing the...
Civilians are also among the dead.
The dead bodies are across, scattered. This is documented. I have, and the bullets are on top of the people. The interview was actually done. Most of it is graphic. The interview was actually done inside the Bor Hospital, and these people. That was the aftermath of the after the SPLMIO troops left Bor. Is that something that can be denied?
What I'm saying to you is that Bor has exchanged hands. When the government troops came to Bor, they have done what they have done. And after, you can imagine that after this Al Jazeera went, they went after the government troops have gone to Bor as well.
That was on the 18th of January.
I'm not saying that who is wholly responsible. I'm saying to you, Gadet, when he started when the conflict started in Bor, Gadet actually assisted many Dinka families to cross the river. This has been testified for by a family that he himself has put on the boat. Let me say this one, because these are the stories that I hear from people. You see, people, when we talk about people, in Gadiang, there were Dinkas who came with us. In Okobo, and in now the refugee camps, those who fled all of this situation. But what you have to remember also is that when these reports are being reported, and we have said this times and over, they have not followed the people who have actually fled to parts of the east.
Maybe on that day you were actually in the bushes of Juba, but I was actually on the telephone with people in Panapandia.
Mm-hmm.
One person is here whose relative, actually five of them, were killed day.
It's possible. It's possible. You're not getting me.
I got you. You have said that every person who actually committed an atrocity or any abuse can never be accepted.
And I'm saying that this report is also good to place them exactly based on the dates and the narratives and what have you. That having said that when we talk about sustainable peace, we want proper investigations for whoever has done what?
Okay.
This is what I'm saying.
Now, let's go to SPLM politics, SPLMIO. Dr. Riek said that there was dictatorship within the government. And that is what most of the politicians, like Gadhoth and most of the military leaders said. And now they were the first people to go and say the same thing about Dr. Riek. Mm-hmm. What happened in Pagak? And by the way, I have to reference one of the, I think, one of the SPLM-IO representative to Australia and then went to Pagak. His name is Agwe Rual. He said that almost 70% of the SPLM-IO is from Angelina.
I'm powerful then.
Oh, you have to dispute that.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to, if you want to go and you want to do something, you have to make up your own story. Agwere is entitled to say whatever he wants to say. But I want to tell you this about SPLM-IO. The meetings we had as SPLM-IO discussing our manifesto, our constitution, our vision, our way forward, even our SPLM, during the struggle, I've never had this number of meetings. In Pagak, we had big Pagak meetings.
Is that the one on the 18th of April 2014?
Yeah, we had big five Pagaks. We called them Pagak 1, Pagak 2, Pagak 3, Pagak 4, starting with that one.
Yep.
And those meetings are always open discussions, are always and includes the first meeting, actually, we were about 6,000. People there.
Delegates.
And that meeting deliberated, and the minutes are there, and these minutes are actually reflected in our negotiations for peace agreement. Some of the positions that we have as SPLM-IO are usually positions discussed in these meetings. So we are a very talking organization. We are very open.
You are very open and very talking, but why would these people leave and abandon that good forum? Why?
You can ask the person who left. You know, sometimes, let me tell you a story about General Taban Deng.
Yep.
Taban Deng has been one of the people who has been very uncomfortable with the meetings in IO. He had always, either when he goes there, he doesn't want things to be discussed. He just wants to do things. Okay, we decide and let's go, and this is our position and whatever.
So that is a concept of imposing that, whatever you want to people.
That's his way. That's his way of doing things. So you have people like that who feel threatened when you open up for discussions and other views and what have you, who actually not only threaten, but feel that they cannot actually, if they are defeated in a dialogue, that they cannot actually adopt the other view, which is the view of the majority, to move with. Some of us think that, okay, if we decided in this and that this is the decision of the organization democratically and fairly, you get over whatever positions you have and you have to implement what the majority have decided. Next time you may win. And, you know, others will also implement what you champion. And that's the nature of democracy, and so on. So those who leave, I'm not going to really talk on their behalf. Let them speak on their own behalf. Each and everyone has their own reasons why they're leaving, but it's not because of lack of democracy.
Okay. Now, when we come back to where our time is almost up, but in 2000, are we on? Okay. In 2016, most of the politicians that left or the military officers went to Juba. Some of them are actually from Australia. You're sitting here with Peter, Tito Pal, mm-hmm. and Paul Borger, which was one of them, and majority of them as well. I have listened to Taban and I've listened to Ezekiel Lol, who actually when they visited the United States with Dr. Riek, said good things about Dr. Riek. But at the end, when they left again, there was nothing good. What politics do you think this will play if all this senior leadership can revolt against Dr. Riek? And by the end of the day, you're saying that, oh, he has a good solution. But here, Riek revolt from the government or left the government and form his own committee. Forced out from the government. And then his own team, without any gun, left.
You're talking about Ezekiel and Taban and Dina Matuk. You have to know that the Political Bureau The majority of the political bureau remains with us, IO, here. Taban was very upset that he was not appointed Minister of Petroleum. Everybody knows that. Ezekiel actually was not talking to me even when the crisis erupted, because he thought that the reason why he was not appointed minister is because of me. I have no power in the SPLM to actually divide. What they forgot is that we as the political bureau had a meeting, and Dr. Riak has told us that we have 10 positions for ministers. Let us discuss them. The first person who said they should not be discussed was Taban Deng.
He don't need people to discuss who was supposed to be appointed.
There was only one person in our political bureau. I kept quiet. There was only one person who insisted that we must discuss, but then he became a minority voice.
Who was that person?
I don't need to name him.
Okay.
But that one person who was saying, "Yeah, Jamal, let's discuss it." And then Taban stood up. He was not even sitting down. He was walking away. He said, "Look, what power would the chairman have? This is the decision of the chairman, and if you lose out, you lose out. You have to accept the decision that will come from the chairman." He was the first to protest, and he was the first to resign from the JMAC.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
So, what would have been the best solution for him to stay in SPLM-IO?
The political bureau then had meetings, and there were people who were proposing that Taban is to be dismissed. Dr. Machar said, "No, I'm dialoguing with Taban." And they continued to dialogue until, you know, things went sour.
So how did you go down with the word now that, I will say this in the Arabic, Juba, Gal Taban, Riek Machar, Garajuse, Arabia, South Africa? How are you going down with that? Is that...
Who yao garash riang machar fi South Africa za Arabia mind the wheels wala demuno
who yao gal za da gal mo garash
da who yao garasho
homa who gal za da gal dunia garasho
let's say that he may have a point in the sense that actually the international community has decided to isolate the opposition.
Okay.
And now by the admission of the South African saying that they are actually being paid to keep Riek Machar.
So the government of South Sudan is paying them? Or is somebody paying South Africa to keep Dr.
Riek? Somebody is paying South Africa.
To keep Dr. Riek there?
Yeah. This was a statement from the office of the deputy president and the president. So now that having said that...
So he's a happy man while people are fighting. He's living a good life.
That's why I'm asking. It has been 9 months. Taban kept promising peace. People seem to think that there has been a split in the IO. How is that impacting on the peace that Taban is preaching and SELFA? Now, the question to the world is that, because actually State Secretary of the former administration, John Kerry, when he went to the region in August, he was the one who went and changed the minds of the region, because the region was till then holding President SELFA responsible and Taban.
And then they automatically change.
And they automatically change because Kerry said that peace can be implemented with Taban. Now, Taban is not the constituency of IO, because if he was to be the constituency of IO, we would have seen different. Now, that's one. Number two, Taban is not speaking on behalf of those people who are suffering. What is happening is that Taban has had no impact on changing the Scorch Earth policy that is being carried out by the government. That's number one. Number two, Taban has no impact in changing the humanitarian situation that is happening, or the targeting of the civilian, or the government offensive. So if he has no impact on those, what peace is he going to bring with SELFA?
Now, if we look at... let's agree that the region changed from Kenya to Ethiopia and May to Uganda. Mm-hmm. That most of these areas were SPLM-IO members were sitting and they were actually coordinating some of their meetings. But now that totally changed. Vice President, former Vice President is in South Africa. And SPLM-IO divided into two. Taban believe is going to bring peace, but we have seen people in Unity State, in Kodok, where people are still fighting, in Equatoria is getting worse. Where is peace going to come?
Now, this is where your role comes in as actually not just a journalist, but also a South Sudanese citizen. Because what the IO is calling for is a political process that will help resuscitate the agreement. Why we stick with the agreement? Because we think the agreement provides a program that can actually help the country to transform itself. People sometimes misunderstand it as equivalent to preserving power, President Kiir on power, and you know, and so on. No, people need to look at the agreement as a program. And this program, we need to bring it and put it and find a way of implementing it. It is the only thing that will help us. It needs to be reviewed, though, having said this. We need to find a way of sustainably implementing this agreement.
Do you think it's not dead now?
It has collapsed. It has collapsed in the sense that it is not being implemented. But as a document, when we say we sit on the table, we are not going to start from scratch. Remember, when we started the negotiation, the international community was only after a government of transitional unity, a government of national unity. And John Kerry, again, when he went to Juba in 2014 and he got SELFA to agree, he thought that he was victorious. When he came to Addis, we told him, no, you're not victorious. There are root causes that need to be addressed. The government of national unity is not a solution, because what we have in South Sudan, you may want to term it as power struggle. But that power struggle resulted from the fact that there are fundamental issues that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
And if we don't address this, you cannot. The government of national unity is supposed to be a vehicle for implementing the resolutions of the conflict. So the government of national unity should be the last thing, because it has to.
As a party, you know, when I have not read much about the blueprint about the policies of SPLM-IO, but when you went out and formed your party and put forward some of the policies, one of the things that I discussed with Dr. Riek Machar was that he was looking for democratization and federalism. And the way you look at federalism is like reviving the former districts, which were then down to 21. Was that a solution? Was that a solution to anything, actually?
Not necessarily. Actually, the former district was actually basically, if you wanted, people were talking about more states. Now, if you talk about states, you have issues of boundaries, you have issues of this. And we, as a party, we felt that, okay, if you want more states, at this time, when you don't have a space for people to sit down, work on boundaries, work on and so on, we have an acceptable formula, which is the former districts. Nobody disputed this. Nobody had fights over them. We can use them as a vehicle until such time that we are doing our permanent constitution. So it's not about just going back to the former district, but it's about devolving power to those former
and
districts.
Let's come now. You have lived in the West, mm-hmm. especially in Europe for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think people of South Sudan need more governments, or they need services?
The people of South Sudan need power devolved to them, resources devolved to them. Now, services, it depends on what vehicle you use for delivering services. We have seen the regime in Juba, the centralized system whereby the power is, and we've seen the concentration of resources in the capital. And let me tell you the proposal of IO. Our proposal is basically we said the resources in each of the states belongs to that state, and that state is to contribute to the center and not the other way around. Because concentrating the resources, taking them, and the center divides the resources has been one of our problems. It even took all the intellectuals to be in the center. So yeah. you're lacking development.
Then this would be a problem of Kiir and Riek Machar too, because according to CPA, it was divided that the decentralized system was saying that there would be a national government.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be state government.
Mm-hmm.
There will be county.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be Bomas.
Exactly.
The chain of division was well articulated. And there was a time that was saying that in 4 years' time, these powers will be taken to a state.
Exactly.
And these powers will remain with the national government. And then from there, the concurrent powers will be the only point where this government will negotiate.
Exactly.
And Riek Machar and Key never dealt on that. They have never actually sorted out.
Not quite. And that is actually why they fell off on the constitutional matter in 2011 when we were now doing our transitional constitution. What I was just telling you is precisely what was described in the CPA. The difference, the small difference, is that during our interim period, this was not implemented. It was the resources were coming to the government in the center, and the government is giving a small token to the states.
Masadat.
Aywa. Actually, they call it a grant. And it was each state was getting like 10 million every month. Just imagine all that petrodollars. They were all wasted in Juba. We are saying this must go back to the state. And in this system of physical, if you like, distribution of wealth, the center has no power. The center should be slim and small and should get only what goes to the projects that will be implemented in the center.
If we were to make things wonderful miracles today, Angelina Teng and Dr. Riek Machar in power, what solution, what is the quick solution that you have for the problem of South Sudan now? Knowing that now we are, South Sudan is polarized more than even in the 1970s, more than even Anyanya II and the SPLA,
serious.
Because there was that, people were still hoping, they see themselves as one people. During SPLA, SPLM, even during the 1991, there was a split, but the structures of the 64 tribes were not actually touched. But this time, they have been touched, and people are totally separated. I've just seen some bad pictures out of Bor today, between Bor and Juba. About seven women and 10 children, and three children have actually been killed. Very bad pictures. Where are we heading to, and what will be the best solution?
Me, I'm somebody who feels that, and I'm telling this to all the South Sudanese, and to anybody who feels that they believe.
464 people are listening to you. Yeah,
exactly. I'm saying to all of you that we must be part of the solution and not part of the problem. I want to repeat that we want to call for this resuscitation of the agreement and the initiative for peace. Now, having said that, a fabric of our society has been destroyed in a way that you cannot even imagine. And that needs all of us. I said this in a statement, and I was actually talking to a conference, a Nuer conference, and I asked them, what kind of a peace do you want in South Sudan, and who are you going to make it with? Now, there is a notion there that there is a Dinka fighting other tribes. I'm saying, no, there is a government using our resources, using our power, recruiting Dinka, giving them false images that actually this is Dinka power being taken by others.
And the same thing with the SPLMIO?
No, it's not. It's not the same thing. I will tell you it's not the same thing, because SPLMIO is all over South Sudan as we speak right now. They're in Kajukeji, they're in Raja, they're in and they're not Nuer. That's one. Now, let me say this. This is very important. This is very important, Degiga. This is very important. There is a government with men in uniform, people on orders. I always tell people the Dinka chiefs did not actually mobilize themselves to say we are going to fight the Nuers, the Murles, the whatnot. No. If any Dinka feel that into power, Bitou, he want to protect, are they ready actually to stand trial with that regime? It is not their responsibility. The deeds of the government are the responsibility of that government, and we must call a spade a spade.
But where is this concept of Dinka government coming in? The last time I checked at the government, every top-level government officials, there are Nuer officials.
I didn't say not Dinka
you,
government.
I'm saying from people outside. Actually, the government is dominant. When we talk of a transitional government now, is dominated by other tribes.
They come from utterance of President Selfa. President Selfa makes statements such as, you know, of course I have to have a Dinka army because, you know, the telling Waniga, your people, your boys are refusing. Such utterance
Were you talking to Dr. Riek? And if I were to talk to Ayandit, I will ask this. When the Tiger was actually composed of two big gas tribes, the Nuer and the Dinka, did you guys know that that was a time bomb?
In the Tiger division, there were many Murle. Let me tell you, I'm talking about my own experience.
Yep.
There were many Murle, there were many Mundari, there were many who actually died protecting Riek Machar. They were part of Tiger. I'm not going to deny their souls today. But you're right in saying that it was in a way predominantly that, because remember Tiger, most of the Tiger, I don't know how the recruitments came from the side of the president, but remember there were people who were absorbed from Paulina Matip's...
The former bodyguards of Paulina Matip.
And so on and so forth. So it is right to say that, but it is also fair to say that in our house when we were there, we had a lot of people who are from different ethnic groups.
Yeah, the former executive director of former vice president was he a Dinka? Deng Deng, was he?
Deng Deng is a Dinka. Yeah.
Okay, where is he now?
He's on the run.
Okay, now let's go back to the crisis. Actually, this is where we are finishing because our time is almost our time is gone. But on the July crisis,
mm-hmm.
you were left in Jebel, and yeah. Dr. Riek went to the office where the conflict started.
Mm-hmm.
A day after, how did you escape again from Juba? And there was I think if I could quote a lot of statement by Gordon Boy Malek, he actually confirmed that.
Do you actually quote Boy?
No, he's an ambassador.
No.
He's an ambassador. he's an ambassador. So he said that some of you were not surviving, and one of the statement was that Garwije Dol and Kong were dead.
Mm-hmm.
Only to emerge that all of you are alive. How did you escape?
By the grace of God. And even that J1 is by the grace of God. Because I'm one believer that know that when God has not decided your time, no one can actually change anything. And this is what people in Juba forgot when they were making their plans. They never left space for God. We were in our house. We actually, as we were moving, we left the house Sunday morning.
The fabricated buildings that were built.
Yeah, they were destroyed and so on. But we left that morning when the shooting started on site 2.
Okay.
And we went and as we were crossing Ye River, actually, we even met with the tank.
SBS Dinka. The Kamdun Jatak Binipin. A Jerban, Kochikato, Kachiele Cake, Kukaloiros, Niemen on demand. Name sbs.com.au/Dinka. And you hide from that. Were you driving or you start walking actually?
No, we drove and then we crossed the Ye Road. And when you cross the Ye Road, of course, you can't drive anymore.
Okay.
The rest is walking until Garamba Park. We never use a car until we went to Garamba Park. But I want to say that the first shot, actually, if they assume that what James Kong Rale was killed is because they actually planned to kill him there. The first shot was on Kong Rale on Sunday because there was a colonel or somebody called by the name William Nguyen whose house was just inside one. And he's one of the regime's guy. And he kept calling. Now, James on the phone with those of the JMCC, he said, I'll take him out. And you guys can come and take him. James took him out of his house. As James stood in the middle of the road so that they come and receive the guy, that's when they opened the fire on James Kong Rale. And this guy knew exactly what they were doing. So it was a trap that they were sending. And that was the first shot on Sunday morning. And so on. But also, by the grace of God, he's around today.
Now, just take us to that journey, because most of the time, these stories are good to be heard. How did did you cross on Kerguelo area or from Pojululand to where? How did you get to Congo?
We went through Southern Bari.
Okay.
We went to Pojululand.
Yeah.
We came back again because we are also trying to avoid government
area.
We came back again to Nyangoraland.
Okay.
And then we started to walk through Jambo.
Okay.
Going to Moroland and so on. And all the time, now I know how they were tracking us because we are told that actually they get satellite images from they were being assisted by the Israelis to have these satellite images.
Taken. Were they using your trier to track you down?
Initially, yes, because Dr. Riag was still communicating with Salfa up to the 15th, and he was actually talking to the UN, telling them, create a buffer zone in Juba. We want to sit down and talk. Now that the ceasefire has been declared, but the UN told them we are not going to, we cannot do it, we cannot afford to, and so on.
He
even asked the Americans to use the Marines that were there to support the UN so that a buffer zone can be created and so that people can...
Who was directing you? Because when Dr. Riek was fighting, he was in Northern Upper Nile, but he has never been to that. I think the last time I saw
that's
him...
That's why I was telling you that IO is everywhere. When we left from Juba, most of the IO field commanders of Equatorial region were in Juba because we were discussing issues of cantonment, something that Selfa was refusing to say, to acknowledge that actually IO has forces in Equatoria, and he called them bandits. So we left with all the leadership of the army. We have forces there who have directed us, who have taken us, who have walked with us all the way to the Congo. So it's IO troops, IO soldiers, from Equatorial region who have actually shown us the way. The IO membership and the communities have in many ways supported us with something to eat and what have you. They have suffered a lot because everywhere we go, as soon as they discover we arrive here, they will come and destroy that place.
So they were almost... There was somebody in that team that was escorting Dr. Riek Machar, was somebody killed or injured?
We were a big team, nearly 3,000 people. People died of hunger, people died of the fighting, because there was fighting nearly every other day or every day. We lost one person to a helicopter gunship, despite the fact that they were coming every day and literally hunt us down. But again, by that grace that I was telling you earlier, we have been shielded from that.
How did you communicate with the UN then after I saw the pictures that were posted with the swelling and Dr. Riek on his stretcher? Were they true, and what happened to him? There was a report that he was shot, but he denied that on Al Jazeera interview.
He was not shot. On the 11th of August, that's when we actually crossed the border to the Congo. They actually pursue us all the way into the Congo. Even the day we were extracted, the helicopter gunship was on our heads, actually, and the UN had to send a gunship to fight off and chase off the gunships of the
government. Before picking you up?
Yeah. When they came to pick us up, over our heads, the gunships of Juba were over our heads. And when they saw the UN gunships, then they fled. So that was the status of things.
So we mean they were actually having information of where and exactly where you are at.
Exactly. Even the Suraya that we were using for communications, they were listening to it. We've got transcripts coming from Juba on those conversations and what have you.
So you were being tapped and recorded where you are going to.
Exactly. But also they have satellite images and what have you, and so on. They have spent a lot of money on the war efforts. And this is a shame because, right now they're not able even to feed.
What happened with the soldiers that will remain in Congo? Because now some of them become refugees. And I've seen stories that some of them need to go back as civilian to South Sudan. And what are you getting?
There are about 8 people who have decided to go back to South Sudan, to Juba, let me say, not South Sudan, to Juba. But they are actually with the UN, the UN protection, the UN mission there in the Congo.
But you don't have ability to take them back to South Sudan?
You see, once you reach, you become, they're no longer combatant as far as the
civilians.
UN, as long as the UN is concerned. Because the UN will not evacuate combatants and take them to combat field. You know that would contradict what the UN is all about. And so on, so let's also be realistic. There, they are there in the Congo, and there is a discussion on. They have been actually asked wherever they want to go.
Now, which,
and that's where you have these eight people decided to go to Juba.
Politics sometimes take a toll on people, and you are a mother and a wife at the same time. And I've listened to the vicious stories on social media. You, Mama, and Rebecca, and many of the other women who are actually taking politics. How do you handle that?
I don't read social media.
But don't somebody tell you that you are being abused and you are being sold?
It doesn't matter really, because I know I'm doing the right thing. I know I have to make a difference. I know in that country now, I would have nothing to tell my grandchildren if I actually didn't do my best to make a difference.
You will not go without a question about 1991, and it's not what you expect. I have been reading a lot.
How come I not? Why do you assume that I don't expect it?
Okay. Now, I've been trying to locate some information about where was Angelina, but I hardly get information. What happened? Where were you in 1991?
I was in England.
So, nothing. Were you part of what happened? Were you a politician then or not?
I have been an advocate for South Sudan issues, and I have been an advocate for the values that the 91 stood for, the right of self-determination, the human rights situation within the movement, the democratization of the internal organs of the movement. And I continue to advocate for those. I feel that In a way, it has paid off. Now we are independent in one. We are still struggling with issues of human rights. We are still struggling with a number of things.
I have a big exchange with Dr. Rieko on that. And this is a claim that the SPLM Nasser, which then became other parties later, once said that they are the champions of the right of self-determination. As politicians, do you remember that in 1954, that what South Sudanese were saying?
Even way before that, South Sudanese were saying it. Now, the Nasser faction actually kind of tried to refocus the movement, because the movement was by then talking about a new Sudan, a united Sudan, and what have you. So the debate within the movement was what is going to be the way forward. Now that the Eastern Bloc is falling, now that the polarizing factors that were there are no longer there, the political environment has changed. Do we need to continue to use as a pretext, if it is a pretext, the slogan of a united Sudan, or do we need to really come out clearly and discuss what is the vision and the way forward?
Was Dr. John Garang wrong when he said that let's fight after the border? And you, the separatists, when you think that you have reached the territory that you went to take, then you can remain and I will go ahead. Was that an indirect way of saying that we are going to get our own?
That was it was, some people felt it was very important to actually be very explicit, because the feeling was that the environment at the time has changed. The environment that required that statement has changed.
But did KPA, the Khartoum Peace Agreement, did Dr. Riek Machar succeed in that field?
He has succeeded in the sense that actually that was the first time the right of self-determination for South Sudan was put in the constitution of the Sudan. And that had helped the negotiation afterwards, when we finally had actually achieved the CPA. And I want to remind you that actually Dr. John, God bless his soul, actually called for Riek Machar and say, let us see what you have actually managed to put into the constitution.
A government was formed called the Coordination Council of South Sudan, which was led by Dr. Riek Machar. But the referendum that was promised never came forth.
And the referendum was achieved later, as any struggle is a process. that was a stage in the struggle of the people of South Sudan whereby we have achieved to actually bring forth the debate on the right of self-determination and put it central again. We managed to put it all the way into the constitution, and that actually helped to, when the government was now negotiating again with the faction of Dr. John, could not get away from accepting that fact.
So you are saying that you are claiming what your dad has been standing for. Your dad needs separation. And you are saying from perspective of the SPLM Nasser that you are the father of the right of self-determination.
I grew up as a separatist. I have no regrets that we are now an independent country.
Okay.
It's something that I cherish and I value very much.
Okay, now let's come to, we are finishing, and we will have no time to for people online to ask questions. But
you ask all their questions.
Okay, now the best part is that as a mother.
Mm-hmm.
People of South Sudan are looking unto you, and they need to hear something that is of any benefit to them, because now people in Australia, people in the United States are suffering because every day telephone is calling this and that is sick, this and this is dead, and there are the people actually paying badly to make sure that the situation go back to normal. What would be the best way, not a position of SPLMIO, but position of Angelina Tan, what is the best way South Sudanese people will be able to listen to themselves and condemn atrocities that are happening?
You know, I go back to the statement I made earlier. I will always be IO, but that's beside the point now. The point is, if you want to make a difference, is first of all, reflect within your own self. Search for the truth within your own self. What is the truth? What needs to be done will come from your honesty. And I say, people say I'm neutral. I say neutrality is about saying the truth. Neutrality, if it puts me against you because you're saying something that is not true, so be it. Now, the people of South Sudan, you need to really reflect on your own conscience. What is the right thing? I say, in Australia here, in North America, in the diaspora, you have a big role. A big role in educating and informing and creating awareness on the truth, not propaganda. I move around, I meet with government, I meet with official, I find a lot of propaganda. It doesn't help our case. It only prolongs the suffering of our people. So
you are telling that on both sides, whether you are a government or you are an opposition.
I'm saying, or an individual South Sudanese who has nothing to do with politics. You have to be honest. That's your first place to start from. And from there, you take the next step that I'm going to put out the right information. And I'm putting out the right information. I am putting it to support the peace in South Sudan. You should have the ability to be able to tell me as Angelina, this is wrong because this is the truth as I know it. I will respect you for it. And any leader who has any integrity would respect you for it and would even reconsider some of their views and positions.
If you sit by yourself, you were born during the war. And the first war started in 1955. And by then, I think you were not yet born. Is that true?
Yeah, very close.
Okay. If you look at that, you grew up in war. Your own children grew up in war. Now you celebrated on the 9th of July. When you sit by yourself and see these pictures, what are you talking about in your own brain that South Sudanese need to know? Do you regret? Do you blame anyone? And
it's the unfortunate thing. You see, leaders can make countries. When your motto becomes that is remaining in that leadership, that's problematic. For me, my regrets, because I always spoke my mind, even during this interim period as we were moving. Anything I see wrong, I always state it out. And that's why I've been an outcast in the SPLM. Not started when way before, not started with, because I always state what is wrong. We have built the foundation of our country based on lies. This needs to change. This needs to change. We need to base it on our realities. And even if we have difficulties with some of these realities, we can deal with it. But if we are forced to lie, just because a president said, or just because a minister said, or just because the SPLM says, we have a problem. And that's what I regret.
Do you see now that the culture of Kokoro is actually now, the culture of Kokoro is now worst, is better than the way we are now. It is very difficult now to tell South Sudanese that the nationalistic heart that they have before July 9th.
It is doable. It is doable. There's nothing impossible on this earth. Like I was telling you that I had asked the Nuer conference, and I asked them, what kind of peace do you want? Do you think you're thinking victory? Is this victory, what is it? Is it against Dinka? Is it against Salva Kiir? Is it against whom? What kind of a victory? We need to ask very honest questions. That South Sudan is a land created for a people, each individually, ethnic groups, and so on. We are all going to live there, and nobody's going to wish away anybody. And this is the best place to start. And you start with your neighbor. Nuers and Dinkas are neighbor. They need to work out how they're going to coexist, and so on and so forth.
Are you meeting South Sudanese today?
I am.
Okay. Peter, if you can, 1 minute on that. Well, when are you meeting South Sudanese, and what is it for? You can use that mic.
It's a general briefing to all South Sudanese today.
In Melbourne. What position are you here?
I'm the chairperson of the SPLMIO
in this
Victoria.
Area. Okay. When are you guys going to come? The SPLMIO and the government, all of you exist in Melbourne. When are you all coming to the studio?
When are we going to come to the studio?
Yeah. And tell us your politics.
When you invite us, we have a very clear message that we want to pass on to South Sudan.
Okay. So where is it happening?
It is happening at Caseborough College, 28 Isaac Street in Noble Park.
Okay. The time is already. We will not talk about it. We have delayed here. And that's Tito Pal. And look at that camera, Honorable. And if you can say in 1 minute, not as a politician, but again as a mother and as a South Sudanese, the level of polarization is too much.
Yeah.
The way we are, as you put it, it has become difficult for us to talk to the world. There is a question of always, what is happening again in your country? Why are you killing yourself? Why is there any religious problem again? And we cannot define this tribal problem. Is there talk to them? You have over 500 people, and look at that camera and tell them.
Yeah, I'm going to say to you that these circumstances that we are going through do not define us as a people. We are a nation, and it is us to define ourselves as a nation. We are not defined by the fact that we are fighting on one side or the other side, but we are defined by the fact that we are a people chosen by God, loved by God, and from that premises we should actually look at ourselves as such images from God and should love ourselves. Circumstances, we need to sit down and honestly address them. They will pass because we've been through circumstances. We've passed them. They don't identify us. We may carry baggages from those circumstances, but it's up to us as this generation, especially this generation, that we need to do something better to hand down to the next generation. The baton to hand down must be a clean one where we have addressed issues of national healing and reconciliation. John Garang said to the Nuer Gaja in Iowa in the U.S., when they asked him and said, Dr. John, we are here because we were massacred in Thiaja. And he said, look, if we talk about keep going back to these things, we would never have a future. Myself and Dr. Riak, we have reconciled. We have moved on because we see the interest of South Sudan lies in our unity. Overcoming. He advised them, overcoming the history of the struggle. We must overcome it. We must embrace it. We must deliberate very openly on it. And it should not hinder us. What kills and what divides is what is unsaid. We need to discuss them very openly. Thank you.
And that's to the last word on about SBS now. We have been talking about some of the issues. Of course, we have the interview of former Vice President and you now. What can you say about freedom of press and what press will play in South Sudan as a last message?
To me, when you talk about a government, government has five pillars. People talk about three pillars, executive, legislation
and judiciary.
But you have two other important pillars that actually plays a very serious role in democracy. One is the civil society and the other is media, free media. If you don't have free civil society movement, if you don't have free media, you are not complete as a democratic society. They are just as important. They are pillars of the government, a democratic government.
You can say your incha moth in Dinka as you did before.
Chokumoth.
Okay. Hey, you know what? We call it a ping SBS Dinka Radio, which I kegleage. And I appreciate everybody who was paying attention to what to our interview. Behind the scene is Peter Chola, Jack, actually, the one holding the camera. And I appreciate Honorable Angelina Teng and Angelina Thomas Kumi for the time that she gave herself to come to us, and the SPLMIO team in Melbourne. Thank you for all that you have done. And people online, thank you for your time. I'm Ajang Dinkyanko and Peter Chola Jack of SBS Dinka Radio. As we said it, it is a forum that we will allow anybody to come to this stage as long as you are listening. Thank you so much.
Piange Aritik ni SBS Dinka. Chao bro di akere chat na to de na Facebook page. Niar walk ne kilo ku tin eten kule ku walk ku te ka pin ne ku won bi ko ko yo SBS Dinka ni Facebook.